Thistle let out a sigh of relief. Finally, now maybe I can get some sleep. Then, first thing in the morning, I'll begin hunting down Professor Evergreen's hidden... He trailed off as he thought he had caught a flicker of movement from the corner of his eye. Nothing was there, but still, something seemed off. The room looked strange somehow. A shiver went down the man's spine, and it was suddenly very cold. So much so that Thistle's breath was crystallizing before his eyes. Oh, great. Now the heat's gone out. Can this night get any worse? That's when Thistle realized what was wrong. The shadows in his room were not normal. They were twisted and longer than they were supposed to be. The next shudder that went through the professor's body had nothing to do with him being cold. Now, he was scared. The shadows began to move, bending and twisting even more as they blocked out more and more light. No! No! Please, no! And then, as there was only a sliver of light left, something new appeared before the professor. It was a Gengar with the most evil smile Thistle had ever witnessed. Then it reached out a tiny arm and gave the man a push, and suddenly he was falling through layers of darkness until finally he landed in a bed of flowers. Well, this has been the nicest landing so far, I must say. The professor picked himself up and began patting the dirt off his clothes. As he did that, he noticed a gathering of people from town all standing up on a hill near a large tree. He recognized a few faces, such as Gray and his mom, as well as Mr. Edwards. Curious, Professor Thistle climbed the hill toward the gathering. As he drew closer, he began to notice that the group was awfully quiet. Usually, when people got together, they couldn't help but make way too much noise. It was the somber expressions that he spotted next, and then there were a few spots of sobbing. Once he finally reached the edges of the group, he saw Miss Ratchet, tears streaming as she looked at a small casket above a pit in the ground. There was a part of Professor Thistle that knew almost instantly what was happening, but there was a stronger desire to not believe it possible that pushed that knowledge aside. What's going on? What kind of holiday celebration is this? I thought this time of year was always filled with people walking around with huge, foolish smiles and loudly wishing happy greetings to everyone they pass. As if hurt by the professor's words, Miss Ratchet collapsed over the casket, sobbing even harder.
Oh, Rosie, why? Why did you have to leave me too?
Thistle stumbled back a step. The side that had already pieced together what was happening was fighting back against the side that wanted to remain ignorant. Rosie? Wasn't that what Miss Ratchet called her sister? But she was only 10. This couldn't be the same one, right? Thistle looked around and realized that he wasn't talking to anyone. He hadn't even seen the Gengar since it had pushed him into that tragic place.
Oh, Rosie, you were so young.
Living in denial becoming a near impossibility, Professor Thistle changed tactics. Where are their parents? If they were actually taking care of their children, then none of this would have had to happen. Gray stepped over to Miss Ratchet and rested a hand gently on her shoulder. Thistle noticed that he, too, had been crying.
Hey,
he said softly.
My mom said you should come home with us tonight. We'll be your family now.
Tears started to stream down the boy's face again. Professor Thistle looked down, unable to watch the sadness any longer. Then he felt a tiny hand slip into his. It startled him, and he looked down. There he met Rosie's eyes staring back up at him. His heart stopped momentarily, and he wanted to flee, but also didn't feel as if he could move at all.
Feeling guilty, Professor?
If Thistle was honest with himself, then yes, he was feeling very guilty, but he tried to justify it instead. It wasn't his fault the girl was sick and died. It wasn't his fault that Miss Ratchet had to raise her sister because their parents were not around. He tried to tell the little girl that he didn't feel guilty, but his mouth didn't seem to be working properly.
It makes sense. I might still be alive if you had been a better man. Ruby had to stay home and look after me after our parents died, so she couldn't go on her Pokemon adventure. But I could have, if I had been given a partner.
Just because it is a widely held tradition doesn't mean I'm obliged to follow it. Rosie shook her head.
No, that's true. if you were obligated, it really wouldn't mean much, would it? But do you think clinging tightly to every Pokemon has made you happy? Do you feel at peace when you spend hours counting and recounting your collection?
What do you know? You're just a little girl.
True. I was just a little girl. And now I'm gone. A life you never needed to consider. And it never made a dent in yours.
No need to make me sound so cold. I didn't know about your condition.
Because you didn't want to know. If it wasn't something that benefited your research or collection, then you couldn't be bothered.
So my crime is pursuing goals and interests?
The girl looked at Thistle quizzically.
A crime? Do you think this is some sort of punishment?
Is it not? Dragging me from my comfortable bed to relive terrible memories and be forced to witness the tragedies others have made of their lives?
No crime has been committed, Professor.
Then why do this to me?
Nothing is being done to you. This isn't a punishment. This is simply granting you what you claim to have already. This is the real world and how it works.
And those choices then can be countered by the choices others make, yes? It isn't as if it is all up to me.
The girl frowned.
It is true. We are all connected. And as you try to break that, you only manage to separate yourself from the choices of others.
What do you mean?
Rosella didn't say anything else. She simply turned to look down the hill and pointed. Professor Thistle looked and saw the rest of the cemetery. From the hilltop where Rosella was buried, one could see over the entire garden of the deceased. And following her finger into the gloomy place, he saw that there was one corner that was darker than the rest. It was overgrown with untrimmed trees and bushes, and it seemed as if sunlight never touched it. A man stood alone there near a single tombstone.
Who is that?
Professor Thistle turned to look at Rosie, but she wasn't there. Standing in her place, still pointing over to the dark corner of the cemetery, was the Gengar. A flash of lightning and a crash of thunder made the Gengar seem even more sinister. Thistle jumped back in fright and found his foot slip down the hill as the heavens opened up and began dumping rain. Thistle tumbled, rolled, and slid down the hill. As he reached the bottom, he slid a few more feet through muddy grass. Wiping rain and mud from his eyes, Thistle looked back up the hill and saw the Gengar still looking down at him, the evil grin still plastered on the Pokemon's face. The rest of the group that had been there for Rosie's funeral were gone. Climbing to his feet, Thistle looked back where the lone man had been standing. He was still there. Thistle, nervous about what he would find, stepped closer to that dark, overgrown corner. At first, the professor had expected to find his future self standing there, but it wasn't. In fact, Thistle didn't recognize the man at all. But he was standing near a pit that was clearly the burial location for another funeral. But who would only warrant a single attendee to their burial?
Ah, excuse me, sir, but could you tell me whose grave this is?
The man didn't acknowledge him, of course. After all, no one else had done this whole bizarre evening. The man took out a pocket watch, looked at the time, and shrugged. He snapped it closed and turned to grab a shovel. And then he started throwing muddy dirt into the pit. Thistle realized that even that man wasn't there for the funeral. He was simply there to bury the body. Who would have lived such a life that not a single soul came to pay their respects? But he already knew. Thistle stepped closer, afraid of what he would see. He peered over the pit and, strangely, found it empty. No body, no casket. There was nothing there.
So it isn't really a grave. Perhaps someone didn't die after all. That means this isn't my grave.
He let out a sigh of relief. There was another flash of lightning, and the name on the crude tombstone was suddenly made clear for just a moment. Mortimer Thistle.
No! Thistle blinked his eyes hard. No! It couldn't have said that. There's nothing here. There's no body here. This isn't my grave. Please, sir, tell me this isn't my grave.
The man continued to fill in the pit, ignoring anything Thistle said. Desperate to get out of there, Thistle turned around to flee, only to find himself confronted by the Gengar once again.
"Please, I'm done with these terrible visions. Take me away. You brought me here, so please make it all go away."
Continuing to grin its eerie grin, the Gengar slowly reached out toward Professor Thistle. One little shove from the Pokemon and Thistle fell backward into the pit.
"No! No! Get me out of here!"
Splat! A large shovelful of mud covered Thistle's face. Frantically, he wiped it away, but more and more mud was hurled down at him. And the mud, combined with the continued downpour of rain, made it hard for Thistle to breathe, let alone shout. But he tried even harder, and each cry was more desperate than the last.
"Please! I don't want to die! Someone! Anyone help! Help me!"
But no one answered Professor Thistle's cry. Just as no one had come to see him buried, so did no one come to his rescue. Just as Thistle had always thought he wanted, he was all alone. And when his pleas died out, everything was finally quiet. The end. With a great big gasp and hands clawing at the mud on his face, Mortimer Thistle sat up with a jolt. His heart was racing and he felt as if he were suffocating, but, in truth, it was all in his head, the remnants of the vision he had just witnessed. For there was no mud on his face, just sweat. And there was no rain falling from the sky, or even a grave to be seen, for Professor Thistle was sitting in his own room, in his own bed.
"What? Was it all just a dream?"
He shook his head.
"No, it couldn't have been. It felt too real. But I'm alive. I can still make things right."
His eyes wandered toward a clock, and he saw it was just after 7 in the morning.
Is it still Christmas Day?
Hopping out of bed, Thistle rushed downstairs where he felt a sharp pain suddenly enter his foot. He hopped up and down and realized it was a piece of the shattered glass from the night before. He tried to dislodge it, and most of it came out, but some small sliver remained. He didn't have time to deal with it, however, and quickly he set to work gathering supplies and getting dressed to go out. His foot still smarting, Professor Thistle grabbed a cane to help keep the weight off of it, as he limped out of his lab. He nearly bowled over a young boy almost as soon as he was out there. The boy looked up at the professor, frightened, certain he was about to be shouted at by the crotchety old man.
"You, boy, you know that Pokeball in the Pokemart window?"
"That purple one with the M on it?"
"Yes, precisely. Do you know if it's still there?"
"Last I walked by, sir."
"Fantastic!"
Then Professor Thistle handed a large sum of money to the boy.
"Please purchase it for me, will you? And pick up, let's see, 10 of the yellow ones, 20 of the blues, and 30 of the regular red and whites."
The boy's eyes grew wide.
"Oh, and then get a few for yourself as well, while you're at it."
"But, sir, I'm not old enough to be a Pokemon trainer."
"Ah, but you will be someday, and I'm sure you'll be an excellent one."
"Right, sir. Thank you, sir."
"That's a good lad. Oh, and meet me in the town square in, say, 30 minutes.
Thistle shouted after the already departing boy. The professor clapped his hands together.
"Now, time to pay a little visit."
Gray was in his house and tossing a ball to his Bellsprout while his Apom was off in the kitchen helping with the dishes. A thunderous and angry-sounding knock hit the front door, and it caused the ball that Bellsprout was about to catch to, instead, smack right into its bell-shaped head, knocking the grass Pokemon over.
"Will you see who's at the door, Gray?"
the boy's mother called out from the kitchen.
"Yeah, okay, Mom."
Gray got to his feet and started for the door. Bellsprout, after shaking its head clear, popped up and trotted after the boy. It caught up just in time for Gray to start opening the door and for the person knocking to take over and slam it open faster, crushing Bellsprout between it and the wall.
Professor? What are you doing here?"
Thistle marched in, grumpy looking as ever.
"I need to have a word with you, Gray."
Okay. Come on in, have a seat.
Gray gestured toward one of the chairs in the living room. Meanwhile, a dazed Bellsprout wobbled on its feet, looking a little flatter than usual.
No, I can't. I'm pressed for time. Let me just say my piece, and then I'll be on my way.
Gray sighed.
Okay, Professor, but you know, it's Christmas morning.
Oh, don't bother. I already know what day it is. It has been made all too clear to me.
Thistle marched farther into the room and looked out the window.
Now, Gray, I have to say, I have had a lot of hope for you. Your circumstances with your father being what they are, I saw you something as a kindred spirit. I thought that perhaps you would one day learn to see the world as I do. I wanted you to wise up to the realities of the world quicker than I did.
Thistle lowered his head and sighed.
But it seems you and I are not quite as alike as I had thought. Your endless optimism and carefree attitude are quite opposed to my way of doing things. You have come up short on my expectations.
Oh. Sorry about that, Professor. I didn't mean to let you down.
A grin crept onto Thistle's face, and he had to work hard to suppress it and keep the amusement out of his voice when he spoke again. This was part of the reason he had been staring out the window and keeping his back to the young trainer.
Listen, I think you are a skilled trainer and you have a lot of potential, but, well, I just don't think you will ever achieve my accomplishments.
And what accomplishments are those?
Gray's mother had marched into the living room, her hands still wet from working on dishes.
Breaking the hearts of children? Using Gray here to do the hard work so you can just hole up in your lab and count Pokemon? Is it an accomplishment in your lonely and pathetic world to not even look at a person you're speaking to?
Mom, please, it's okay.
No, it's not okay.
The woman pointed a finger toward Thistle.
You listen here, Buster. If my son never lived up to your expectations, he would be better off for it. There is no joy in your life, and the sooner you stop trying to suck the joy out of Gray's life, the better. So good riddance and get out.
Thistle's face was red as he worked hard to keep himself from exploding into laughter. Once he felt he had regained control, he slowly turned around and gave them his grumpiest face yet.
Ah, the mother. I hadn't expected you.
He looked back over to Gray.
Listen, Gray, I would prefer a less heated and interrupted discussion, and I do have some other errands to run. So, perhaps you will walk with me toward the town square?
I think not,
the mother protested. Gray held up an arm to stop his mother from approaching. He was concerned she might try to kill the man if given half a chance.
Yes, I think I can do that, Professor. Just give me a couple minutes to get ready.
He looked back to his mom.
You better wait outside in the meantime, Professor.
The professor clicked his tongue and glanced over at the mother. He almost broke right then and there out of fear after seeing the woman's eyes.
Ah, yes, I suppose I can do that.
Thistle tilted his hat and bowed his head toward Gray's mother.
Good afternoon, miss.
And then he limped out of the house, on his cane, to wait. Soon he was headed away from the house and toward the square in the company of Gray, while under the watchful and deadly eyes of the boy's mother. She stood, arms crossed, in the open doorway to her home. When Gray thought they were safe, he began to speak.
What do you have to do that's so pressing today, Professor?
Thistle jerked his head up, as he seemed to be lost in thought.
What? Oh, don't worry about that.
The professor placed his hands behind his back and took a deep breath.
So, as I was trying to say earlier, Gray, you are so far from what I had hoped you would become. I have serious doubts you could ever live up to the expectations I had for you.
Gray's face fell.
You see, if you had listened to me and worked hard instead of coming all the way back here every holiday, then you could have been something. Maybe the best there ever was. And one day, your collection of Pokemon might have surpassed my own.
But, Professor, I still have so much time.
No, Gray. Do not interrupt me. That's why we left your mother's, remember?
Thistle allowed himself a small smirk and gave Gray a wink. You see, if you had followed in my footsteps, you would have collected and learned so much. Your collection would be the envy of others, and then you would spend every waking moment worried that someone might try and steal it. You would be consumed and lonely, bitter and angry. Gray looked confused and surprised by the sudden direction Thistle's speech had taken. Just up ahead, the square was in view, and the young trainer thought he saw a man and a boy standing beside some large bags. The thing is, Gray, I was wrong to try and mold you into another me. If you had listened and given me the time, I would have crushed your optimism, and you would have seen the world as I did, a dark, corrupt place full of treachery, where everyone is only looking out for himself, or simply a great fool. The professor stopped walking and turned to Gray, who also stopped to look at Thistle. The surprises continued as Gray saw tears in the old man's eyes. All this time, Gray, I should have been trying to be more like you instead. To see the world as you see it. To see people, not as enemies, but as feeling individuals, acquaintances, and maybe even friends. I'm so sorry, boy. Thistle dropped to a knee to be more level with Gray. Can you forgive a miserly old fool? Gray blinked, completely astonished and just ever so slightly weary that it was all some sort of trick. Perhaps the professor found some sick amusement in such a game. Still, if he was being honest, treating him as if he wasn't could be one of the worst things Gray could do. So he chose to believe in the possibility that Thistle had actually changed.
Of course, Professor. I forgive you.
Thank you, Gray. That means so much to me. Because if you couldn't, then I don't know if anyone could. You're such a good person. Thistle stood back up and then smiled at Gray. Now, whether or not you forgave me, I made an effort to make amends. As I left your home, I slipped something into the pocket of your jacket while it was still hanging up. The boy raised an eyebrow and had half a smile.
What are you up to, Professor?
Consider it a long overdue Christmas present. Reaching into his pocket, Gray's hand clasped around a spherical object. His eyes went wide, and he pulled it out. It was a yellow and black Pokeball, and he could tell there was something inside. Thistle wasn't just giving him a Pokeball, but a Pokemon.
What? What's in there, Professor?
Thistle grinned. He could see the boy was excited. I think you know. It's what you always wanted. Gray cradled the ball and looked down at it in awe.
No way, really?
Shrugging, Thistle gestured toward the path. Only one way to find out. Wasting no time, Gray tossed the ball and said,
Espeon! I choose you!
And a pink, feline-like Pokemon with two tails appeared onto the path. It looked over at Thistle, and then at Gray, who now held the Pokeball. It seemed to piece together what was happening and walked over to Gray. It rubbed against his leg and made a sort of purring noise.
I don't believe it!
Gray wrapped his arms around Thistle, which shocked him a bit, and he didn't know how to respond.
Thank you so much!
Okay, Thistle said. You're squeezing out all my oxygen.
Oh, sorry.
Gray let go and stepped back. Now, I was wondering, would you be willing to help me out with something?
Yeah. Whatever you need, Professor.
It was clear that Gray wouldn't have turned him down for anything at this point. Perfect. Let's not keep these two waiting any longer then. Thistle said, nodding his head in the direction of the man and the boy with the bags. The boy had purchased everything that Thistle had asked him to, and the man said that when he heard who it was for, he had to see it for himself, and to make sure Thistle didn't change his mind on letting the boy spend the extra money on himself. When it was all cleared, Thistle gave the boy and the man a few extra coins as a thank you, and then had Gray pick up the bags, as Thistle couldn't carry much with his current need of a cane. It was almost exactly 13 minutes later that a large bag sat in front of the small rundown home of Ruby and Rosella. Standing next to the bag was Gray, who was looking off into the distance where Thistle was crouching behind some bushes. Thistle gave a wave of his hand, and Gray took that as his signal. The boy gave a knock on the front door, and then he ran off as fast as he could around the corner of the building so he wouldn't be seen. After a moment, the door opened, and a little girl looked at the large bag and then all around the outside, looking for who knocked.
"Who is it?"
Ruby called from inside.
"There's nobody here,"
Rosella answered.
But there's a huge bag out here, and I think it's full of Pokeballs."
"What?"
"There's a bag full of Pokeballs out here."
Soon Ruby joined her younger sister, and the two worked together to pull the bag into the house. Gray, peering from his corner, gave Thistle an excited thumbs up, and Thistle returned the gesture. Then Thistle stood up and limped his way toward the front door. He let the corner of his mouth drop into its familiar frown, and he took his cane and rapped harshly against the door. Once again, it was Rosella who answered the door, but this time she didn't say a word. She simply looked up with fright at the menacing man.
"Now who's there?"
Ruby asked. When there was no answer, she tried again.
"Rosie?"
"I think your sister is talking to you, little girl," Thistle growled.
Immediately, there was the sound of thudding footsteps, and soon Ruby was at the door.
"What do you want? Get out of here. Isn't it bad enough I have to see you later today at work?"
"Funny you bring that up, Miss Ratchet." Thistle narrowed his eyes at the young woman. "But you won't be coming in to work today."
Ruby's head snapped back as if she'd been slapped.
What?
"You won't be coming into work today, and I question whether you'll come into the lab ever again."
Are you firing me?"
Rosella's eyes went wide, and she looked back and forth between Ruby and Thistle.
"You can't fire her, especially on Christmas. You're so mean. Why are you like—"
Her rant was interrupted by a coughing fit. Ruby pulled her in.
"Go back in and get under the blankets, Rosie. You still need more rest."
This little exchange kept the two Ratchets too distracted to notice the pained expression on Thistle's face. He recalled the vision of the future he had been taken to, and he hoped that the girl's fate would not be the one he had seen. With Rosella heading in and out of Thistle's way, the professor stepped into the threshold.
"Here's the problem, Miss Ratchet. It would seem someone else is in possession of a great many supplies I had purchased recently."
There was a frightened squeak from Rosie inside the house, and Ruby whipped her head around to look at Thistle again. Her eyes went wide with terror.
"That seems strange, doesn't it? Especially in light of the fact that the objects in question are the very same you had concerns about last evening. Something about Pokeballs being expensive. Ring any bells?"
"Look, we didn't steal any Pokeballs from you, sir."
"Of course not. That would be a completely foolish thing to do, wouldn't it? Still, it would be just as foolish of me not to look everywhere for them."
Sure. Well, it would be really weird if they were here, don't you think?"
"Very odd indeed. But I'm here now, so if I can just peek inside and make sure."
"My sister isn't feeling well, as you could tell, so I think it's best you not come in, actually."
The professor sighed.
"I understand." There was a look of relief on Ruby's face, and then Thistle said, "But still, I must insist."
With that, the professor pushed forward and entered the living area, where things looked fairly similar to the way they had when he had been there with the Haunter. The only real difference was that the couch had a couple feet off the ground as something large was apparently shoved underneath. Thistle almost busted out laughing right then at the humorous attempt to hide the bag of Pokeballs. Behind him, Ruby put her face in her hands and shook her head.
No wonder the child is under the weather. There is quite a draft in here. Perhaps you should light a fire, Miss Ratchet."
"We don't have a lot of wood. We save the fires for evening."
"Ah, of course. Well, why don't you just have your Pokemon cut some more wood for you?"
Rosie peered up from under her blanket.
Professor, we don't have any Pokemon.
As I told you last night, if you might recall.
Ruby said, her lips tight. She had moved over to stand next to her sister. Are you sure? I could have sworn you had a Machoke around. A harsh, bitter laugh escaped Ruby's lips.
I think I would know if we had something so handy around.
Thistle frowned. Well, then what's that Pokeball over there on the shelf? Whatever is in there must be able to help somehow, at least.
As I told you before, sir, we don't have any Pokemon and we don't have any Pokeballs.
Thistle turned and pointed at the Pokeball on the shelf.
What? That's not ours,
Ruby said. Thistle raised an eyebrow. Evidence suggests otherwise. It even has your family name on it.
What are you talking about?
Ruby marched over to grab the Pokeball.
There is no way it does, because we don't have any Pokeballs.
Ruby stopped short when she picked up the ball, and it indeed had the name Ratchet inscribed on it.
But that's impossible.
Well, let's see how far your deception goes. Is there indeed a Pokemon in there? Nobody moved. Ruby and Rosella just stared at the ball with a mix of emotions that included fear, confusion, and curiosity. Well, get on with it. Ruby wiped her brow as the situation had begun to make her sweat. Then she tossed the ball. A flash of light, and then a large, muscular figure appeared. It was indeed a Machoke. No Machoke, eh? Thistle said. Are we still sticking to the Pokeballs I bought not being here? Ruby looked at Rosella, and Rosella was looking at Thistle.
Yes,
the younger girl said quietly. Thistle shrugged. Ah, well, I guess I'll have to continue my search elsewhere. But first, why don't you send that Machoke to get some wood, and then we can light this fire? You certainly wouldn't deny me an opportunity to sit and rest a minute. I've had a tough time walking all day after getting some glass stuck in my foot. Before anyone could stop him, he dropped down onto the raised part of the couch, and as soon as he did, Pokeballs poured out of the bag and bounced and rolled all over the floor. The professor shot back up and looked around. Ah, so the Pokeballs did end up here! Rosella vanished under her blanket, and Ruby started speaking rapidly.
We didn't know they were stolen. Someone just left them outside our front door. There was a knock on the door, and when Rosie answered, nobody was there.
Thistle held up a hand to stop the young woman's rapid explanation. Hold on, hold on. Stolen? Whoever said they were stolen? Rosella peeked her eyes back out, and Ruby looked at Thistle as if he'd lost his mind.
You did! You said they were stolen!
Did I? Thistle began stroking his chin. I don't think I did. After all, I hadn't thought they were stolen.
But you said that you just bought them and that you were looking for them.
Yes, looking to see if they were here. They were a gift. I bought them for all of you. Well, actually, I gave a boy some money so he could buy them for me, and then I had Gray carry them over, but it was my intention to have these all brought here.
You, Professor Thistle, who clings tightly to everything he owns?
And hates Christmas.
Right, and hates Christmas. Thanks, Rosie. You bought us a gift? All this?
Is it not enough?
No!
Oh, I see. How much more do you think you need?
No, I mean, no, this isn't true. This is some kind of trick.
Hey, yeah, wait.
Rosella spoke up again, her face completely uncovered now.
You said you were firing her for stealing.
I think if you play the conversation over again in your mind, you will find I did not. I suggest that your sister might not come back to work for me, and there was a very good chance she wouldn't be coming back to the lab. After all, I have not treated her very well during her time with me. I've not treated you well either. Which brings me to my other gift, though admittedly it is something I should have given you ages ago. For the first time, Thistle saw hope return to the young girl's eyes. I have 3 Pokeballs here, each with a different Pokemon inside. You can choose one, and only one, to be your partner. Rosella threw off the blanket and rushed over to Thistle.
What's inside them? What choices do I get?
Well, I don't want to spoil the surprise, so instead, I will tell you the types. We have fire, water, and electric-type Pokemon. Which one do you want? Rosella thought for about a quarter of a second and then said,
Fire.
Very well. Thistle handed over the Pokeball. Don't open it just yet.
What? Why not?
Because I want your sister to choose one as well. Ruby's mouth dropped. I know I'm extremely late on this, and I wish I could go back and change it all for you. But, well, it can be yours now.
Well, I guess water. I've always liked water.
Then here you are. A shaky hand reached out to collect the Pokeball Thistle offered. All right, open them. Both girls unleashed their new Pokemon, and out emerged a Flareon and a Vaporeon. The new Pokemon trainers were shocked to see what Thistle had just given them. And this is why I don't expect to see Ruby in my lab for a while. After all, she had been robbed of her own Pokemon journey earlier in life due to my greed. And the two of you being so close, I can't imagine she would have an easy time with you going off alone, Rosella. And so, in short, I will continue to pay Ruby and fund your journey. I won't hear a word against it. Just consider it back pay for all the money I should have paid you in the years that have passed. Soon after, Gray joined the celebration in that tiny home. Gray called his mother, and she came over, and Thistle apologized to her for his earlier prank and the way he had treated her and her son. News of Thistle's change spread throughout the town, and the boy, the Pokemart shop owner, and many others also came by, and some even started working on a few repairs the house desperately needed. Thistle even contacted Mr. Edwards and his other aides to come by. Professor Thistle also assured that Rosella saw a doctor and got the medicine she needed to get over her illness, and Thistle hoped that it had been enough. The decisions of that day had lightened the old man's heart, and he once again found joy in researching and learning about Pokemon, a joy he had lost so long ago. He even forgot all about the money his partner, Professor Evergreen, may have hidden somewhere in the lab. It no longer mattered to him. As years went by, the people in town had come to consider Professor Mortimer Thistle the most generous man in town, and he never failed to offer a smile if you were to pass him by. The end.